So, actually, yes, you can take that harmonium away. You were right. We don't need this.
It's okay.
It's good. I think so. Yeah. Okay. So here we go. Time is short. Last Monday, you may or may not know, was Earth Day.
Yes.
So one day out of 365, we celebrate that we're recognizing, oh, we're on the Earth. We're acknowledging this place where we are all living. Yes, you're all welcome to move, because it's the Hare Krishna movement, you know. And I was asked to give a talk online on this last Monday, which I'm just basically going to be repeating now for you. And if anyone was already listening on Monday, my apologies. But I'm presenting this as Cow Care is Earth Care. Can we connect the dots? That's my title. That's my question that I'm raising. Can we connect? How can we connect cow care with earth care? Since I think it's become very mainstream in people's minds that there is an issue, there is a problem, and it seems to be a big problem of how we human beings are affecting this planet, the atmosphere, the climate. Everything is being affected, and it's being affected in ways which are becoming more and more troublesome, not just for humans, but for all the creatures on the planet. Yeah, so there's a lot of talk about this. There's lots of meetings. There's agreements being made. Now I think they're going up to COP29 this coming, whenever their meeting is going to be. And they try to make agreements between countries. We're going to cut our emissions, our carbon emissions. And they all sign papers. And then they all go home and everything goes just as before, more or less. Let's see, yeah. A little history. This Earth Day was established in 1970, and it actually came, it was prompted, in, or it, what sparked interest in this was a book written by one American author, a lady named Rachel Carson. She wrote a book called Silent Spring. And it was a huge sensation because she was showing that the use of chemical fertilizers, especially DDT, I don't know what that stands for, but it's heavy chemicals, is destroying the land in a serious way. And people, no one had thought of this. Oh, we're destroying the land. And so that's kind of the beginning of a movement to be concerned about our environment. Okay, I'm just going to keep moving. Well, I have some quotes here. This is from a scholar in America, also a current scholar named Jeff Sabo, or Sabo, professor of environmental studies at New York University. And he wrote a book called Saving Animals, Saving Ourselves. It's an excellent book, very analytical, very systematic, arguing that if we want to save ourselves, human beings, we have to save the animals. And, So he says in this book, every year, humans harm and kill trillions of non-humans directly. Trillion means, 100 billion, and a billion is 100 million, and a million is 100 times 100,000, 100,000, and it's like that. So trillion is a lot. The U.S. government is $34 trillion in debt. Just that's a little factoid. Keep you wondering how they keep going. Every year, humans harm and kill trillions of non-humans directly through activities such as factory farming, deforestation, and the wildlife trade. And we harm and kill trillions of non-humans indirectly. How? By the impact of our development, our consumption, and our pollution. That's going on, he points out. And he says, more generally, our treatment of other animals is contributing to pandemics, to climate change, and other global threats. And these threats are, in turn, contributing to suffering and death for humans and non-humans alike. And then he says, much of this harm is foreseeable and avoidable. But what do? We look the other way. And we allow the harm to increase with each passing year. So he's telling a rather grim, a dark story. And he continues to say, unfortunately, this work of doing something for animals will not be easy. Why? Because in part, because of pandemics, climate change, other human-caused global threats, are called perfect moral superstorms. So we have the idea of a storm, magnify the storm to a superstorm, and then think of that in terms of morality. Knowing what is what to do and what not to do is very much what morality is about. He says this is a perfect, this means completely horrible, moral superstorm. Then he explains, that is, there are problems which are interspecies, international, and intergenerational collective action problems. We all have problems, and we find ways of solving the problems. Our individual, you know, how do I solve this problem? Everyday sort of things. This is talking about a problem which has a magnitude which is kind of bigger than any material problem that we can imagine for the planet. And he says, we all have an incentive, we all have a good motivation to be part of the problem, to continue being part of the problem rather than part of the solution. And who is responsible for this problem? If we take all the, what is it now, going, it's over 8 billion people on the planet. If we take all the 8 billion people, 0.00000001% of those people are the problem. That's us. We're basically part of the problem. And most of the people are the other 99.99999% are being impacted by this. So everyone is being impacted, is being affected by what is happening on the planet. So then he says, addressing these threats ethically and effectively requires transforming not only our external social, political, economic, and ecological systems, but also, and I think this is where we should wake up, also our internal beliefs, values, intentions, and expectations. So that sounds like a very thoughtful analysis. And so then we may say, so what? But I'm a Hare Krishna, I chant Hare Krishna, I'm vegetarian, I'm good. Well, I think we should ask this question. Are we complicit in what we deplore? Do you know the word complicit? What's in Slovenian complicit? Implicated. We are in the conspiracy. How would you say?
Sokrivets. Take a part of the guilt.
What is it?
Sokrivets.
Sokrivets. Are we sokrivets in what we deplore? Obžalovati. 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 Sounds Italian. Doesn't make sense. We'll get it. Okay, another word could be what we hate, what makes us upset. Okay? So this is the question that we're raising. And then we may ask, so what is it that we don't like? Well, we don't like how animals are treated, right? In particular, we might be upset about how cows are treated. And I'm sorry to give you this information, but it's just what it is. Some 300 million cows per year are slaughtered. 34,000 every hour. And every, 6 million other kinds of animals. Yeah. So like that, I mean, you can go on and on with these sort of statistics, but we don't want to just get you depressed. 89 billion land animals slaughtered 7 years ago. So, yeah, must be more than that now. Yeah, I'm going to move faster now because... Yeah, here's, see, I want to be a little bit provocative. How do you say provocative?
Provocativa.
So I want to say this may be ISKCON's inconvenient truth, namely thinking that being vegetarian and offering our food to Krishna is enough. And having a few small farms with a few protected cows and thinking, this is enough. While at the same time we, and I'm including myself, participate fully in the fossil fuel-based economy, and we think, it's okay, because I'm doing it for Krishna. And lately I've become gradually a little more conscious of how many things that I use which are made of plastic. It's amazing how much plastic we use, and every bit of plastic that we use. See, chemically, plastic is made of long chains of molecules, according to chemists, and these long chains of molecules, they just don't break apart. So they're not biodegradable. And so they will, you know, what happens to all of this? It does sort of break up and break down, and then it goes into the water. And then you've all probably heard of microplastics. Right. We're all full of it right now. We're full of plastic. And the ocean is becoming more and more and more and more and more full of plastic. One estimate is that by the year 2050, that's in 26 years, there's going to be as much plastic mass in the oceans as there is biomass in the oceans. So as many fish and plants growing in the ocean, that much plastic there's going to be. And that plastic is, as we speak, it's going through our blood. And we're thinking it's okay. Yeah. So, not okay. Another thing, which I have been reflecting about, the word ambivalence. Do you know this word? I'm putting Tarni Saki to work here. Ambivalence. Ambivalencia.
Yeah, we use also ambivalente. We also use that.
Yeah. Anyway, ambivalence means having sort of mixed feelings about something. Having mixed feelings. So we have mixed feelings about animals. We love cows, even if we don't ever see them. We hate dogs because they're not clean. They're asuchi. I know some of us have pet dogs. I like dogs, yes. But some they say, dogs. No dogs. So, you know, the point is we have kind of mixed feelings about animals. I won't get into this internal conflict of tradition, that's too complicated. Four-sided tunnel of collective rajoguna and tamoguna. What's the four-sided tunnel? This, of course, can be a whole discussion. The late Houston Smith, very famous American scholar of religion. One of the last, if not the last book that he wrote many books, was called Why Religion Matters. He actually was very religious himself. And he says that in our modern life, we're all in a kind of tunnel that we don't recognize. We're inside a big tunnel, and this tunnel has a floor, and it has two sides, and it has a ceiling, and the floor is scientism. It's the faith, it's the belief, the unfounded belief that all problems will be solved by science. Science will have all the answers. And if science doesn't have all the answers, then artificial intelligence will have all the answers. Right? So that's part of this tunnel that we are affected by. Modern education is also part of this tunnel. Why? Because modern education tends to minimize, if not ignore, spiritual reality, spiritual issues. What is the purpose of human life is not a major topic in the schools, and so on. So they trivialize. You know this word, trivialize? Trivial. Making...
Samo miuno.
Banalizira. Yeah, that sounds German. So this is going on. Modern law does the same thing, and also the mass media. Even the mass media may speak about religion sometimes, but it's always in a way just to trivialize, basically. And social media, don't get me started. So, good news. Srila Prabhupada came to the West, came and said, you know what? What you're doing is not going to work. And it's time to change our way of life. And specifically, he put it this way, that's a longer quote. I think I'll try to summarize. He's talking about how, what is flourish? What does it mean to flourish? What does it mean to be well situated materially? He said it's about receiving divine gifts. It's about receiving, recognizing that whatever we have, it comes from God, ultimately. It's as simple as that. And so the opposite of that is our tendency to exploit material nature, and that exploitation process entraps us and puts us in big trouble. Let's see now how to do this. I'm watching the clock because I was told I'd turn into a pumpkin in 4 minutes. Three minutes. I'm going to turn into a pumpkin. You all want to see that, don't you? Yeah. Let's see the Swami turn into a pumpkin. I know, you just want to be entertained. Well, here, the point is...
We can go longer.
A little longer? We can go 2 minutes longer. Now, here's an interesting little analysis of two attitudes, none of which are going to help. But I mention them because these are the predominant attitudes that people have related to the environment. So on the left, you see the objectivist techno-scientific attitude, perception, where the idea is science, yeah. Nature domination, yeah. Artificial world, the world is essentially mechanistic. It's like a machine. Everything is like a machine. And nature, what is nature? That's just resources for us. It's what holds what we need for ourselves. Right? So this is the buzzword nowadays is anthropocentric, the idea that we put ourselves in the middle and judge everything, reality, in terms of our human needs and so on. Now, there's another group, another team, called Subjectivist Romantic. And one might think that these are the good guys, whereas the objectivists are the bad guys, the subjectivists are the good guys. No. They mean well, but it's the same problem, just painted more nicely. So instead of science, they are saying subjective feeling, it's all about feelings. Yes, feelings are good. I feel good, I'm good, you're good, we're all good. Touchy-feely. That love of nature sounds good, but what is that love of nature? It's, well, jumping down one, it's about mirroring our own narcissism. It's the idea that there's a paradise and it's been lost, but we can get it back here in this world. It'll be a place of harmony. It'll be a place of goodness. It'll be very nice. No. Why? Because it's anthropocentric. It's thinking me first. So, yeah, that's the problem. Prabhupada responds to this all in a practical way. He says, if we have sufficient grains, fruits, vegetables, and herbs, what is the necessity of running a slaughterhouse and killing poor animals? A man need not kill an animal if he has sufficient grains and vegetables to eat. But all these natural gifts are dependent on the mercy of the Lord, as he said previously in the previous quote. What we need, therefore, is to be, and this is a word nobody likes, to be obedient to the laws of the Lord and achieve the perfection of human life by devotional service. Oops, it didn't all fit. So that's kind of what Prabhupada is, that's his point. So then I want to suggest a bit more about what we can do to, as I say, connect the dots, how to connect, cow care and earth care. And let me just jump to number three, to be informed, to actually, if we would be informed about what is going on our planet, this could be very valuable. What's going on with species loss? We tend to say, there's extinction of species, so what? That just means some forms of life are going to other planets. Right? So what does it matter? it could matter a lot, because biodiversity, without biodiversity, there are problems for survival. And again, the proliferation, the expansion of plastics is a problem. Now, in ISKCON, at present, we have altogether in the world around 5,000 cows. Within official ISKCON projects, there will certainly be private farms with their cows. 4,000 of these cows are in India, and the rest of the cows are in other parts of the world. Altogether in Europe are about 200 cows. So, about 5,000 cows. Some devotees who are very much involved in this issue and have been working on expanding this cow protection very energetically, with the ultimate aim of supplying all of our deities in our temples with milk, with dairy from protected cows, have calculated how many cows would be needed. Cows meaning cows and bulls and oxen, because only a percentage of them at any given time will be actually giving milk, the female cows. How many cows for the whole of ISKCON around the world to produce at the amount of milk which we are now offering to the deities? Anybody want to guess how many cows we need?
1 million.
No, not that many.
100,000.
Well, that's closer. We need 68,000. So we have 5,000. That's a start. Do we have any space here for cows? No. On the roof? No. Anyway, so that's just a little perspective on cows. And this may all sound very discouraging, like, How are we going to do this? Well, I think we could start by just remembering the many instructions Prabhupada gave on this subject. And here's just one. He said the protection of cows is not merely a religious sentiment, but a means to secure the highest benefit for human society. We like to think that we like to want to think that we want to help human society. We're all about being benefits, being good and beneficial, and we're giving so much spiritual knowledge for society. Yes? Yes? No? Yeah. So that's good. We need to do more of this. And we want to show something, isn't it? We want to show something practical, because people want to see something practical. They say in America, especially in New York City, talk is cheap. You know this expression? Talk is cheap. Speaking, everybody can speak. So I'm speaking, everyone's, what did he say? Anyway, Prabhupada says, protection of cows is not merely a religious sentiment, but a means to secure the highest benefit for human society. Why cows? Cows are so big. They eat so much. It's easy to keep a dog or a cat. But a cow? I don't have any space in my apartment. I'm sorry. How many of you live in apartments? apartments. Many of you live in apartments. Some of you live in houses, separate houses. Oh, you're very fortunate. So I'm not saying now you should all go out and get a cow. What I'm saying is I just think we need to talk more about this and think more about it and direct our energy more in this direction. When COVID started, suddenly, what was one of the first things that happened when the COVID pandemic came? Everyone rushed to the supermarkets. And what did they buy?
Toilet paper.
The demigods must have been really shaking their heads. What is with these human beings? Yeah. But after they got enough toilet paper, they stocked up. They had a whole room full of toilet paper at home. Then, food. And then everyone kind of thought, oh gosh, what if there's no food in the supermarkets? Then what? And suddenly, gardens became a thing. Isn't it, Leonard? Suddenly everyone thought, yeah, actually, gardening. And everyone was going on the internet and finding, how do you garden? Oh, well, you need seeds and you need plant and sunlight and water. Yeah, we can do this. But then what happened after the COVID was over? Everyone forgot about it. Back to so-called normal. When this is before most of your time, there was a time when Berlin, the whole city of Berlin, was surrounded so that no trucks could come in from the west to West Berlin. This was when Berlin was divided, East Berlin, West Berlin. And the attempt was, we won't say by who, the attempt was to sort of choke West Berlin, to force it so that they would kind of surrender and become part of the East. So then the West said, okay, we're going to fly in supplies. So they did this, I don't know, for some weeks they were flying in supplies into West Berlin. And then the East said, okay, we surrender, you can continue. The point is that the city of Berlin, they understood people could only survive for about 4 days without supplies coming from outside. 4 days. Yeah. So the structure of our society has become really very, it's actually quite dangerous, the condition we're in, but we're so accustomed to it, we think all is all right. Anyway, I'm going to stop there because this is actually, now is the beginning of the presentation that I was going to make, but we kind of got delayed. And so we can save this for another time. This is about cow protection and some of the some sort of basic points about cow protection and how we might develop it on a higher level. But I'll stop here for now. because Sri Sri Panchatattva are waiting, and we don't want them to wait. Jai Grantaraj. No, we didn't read from Grantaraj. Anyway, Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. My apologies for a sort of different style of presentation, I suppose you could say. But I'm thinking about these things, and I think we're all thinking about them, but let's keep the discussion going. Yeah? Gaur Premanande.